Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Welcome. This is the Coco Express Show, and yes, it's me, Aurelia Lyles, your host. Today is Saturday, July 24th, 2010, and this is an open discussion topic for anyone who's interested in calling in and just giving their opinion or making a comment. You can dial in by dialing 347-637-2319, and please press 1. Now, the topic for this particular show today is parents, what concerns you in relation to education, violence, and the media? You know, this all came about because I was having a conversation with someone, and walking away from the conversation, I was just kind of thrown away in deep thought. And I started thinking about my role as a parent, on what other parents have as concerns, and it was just overwhelming for me. And I said, you know, let me find out what other parents are thinking about, what their concerns are. It may not just be me thinking this way. There are others out there, I'm sure, who have the same feelings or even some other concerns that I don't share or have. So if you're a parent or an educator, every day you have serious concerns, like you want to know how to prepare your child, a child, to participate in this ever-changing landscape we call life. Many have said, and I've heard this a bazillion times, that they put their faith in God. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but we know that faith without works is dead. Now, with the way things are and the way things going, is this the case? Did we just put our faith in God and walk away from it? Or are we so really on top of things that we don't need to be concerned? I'm just putting this out there. From my perspective, the educational system is in distress. Violence against our youth or with our youth is at alarming proportions. And the media is sometimes misleading. Okay, I know many of you are saying sometimes, oftentimes is more like it. I won't bother you with a whole bunch of statistics because real life speaks for itself. Every time you walk about in any urban community, I mean, you're going to see all the different scenarios that we have to address or deal with on a day-to-day basis. Now, don't get it twisted. We have some exceptional people doing exceptional things. However, they have a great deal of their work being challenged. But who's challenging their efforts? Society, maybe? I don't know. You always hear about a dilemma. What are the real dilemmas? You know, as parents, guardians, grandparents, caregivers, and or educators, you're out there and you don't need me to go into detail. Look out your window. Go to your doors. There's your proof. Here's the deal. My view is often clouded by my inability to understand because some of the things I see make no sense. For example, how can you graduate from high school and not be able to fill out a job application or write an essay? So, you know, with things like that, I flip-flop between what I've been taught, what I know, and what I see. Never really able to take a definite position because I just don't know. I call it the what-if scenario. What if I rely solely on my experiences? What if I rely solely on my education? What if I rely solely on my upbringing, both familial and religious? Each separately would cause me to be biased and show some prejudice, but collectively, they allow some flexibility and room for hope. Now, let's get to the meat of this whole show right today. Education. Are we really ensuring that our children are exceptional students? I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I want to know what you think. My reason for saying what I'm saying is because as long as you have poverty, there's going to be inequality on all levels, and that includes educationally. Violence. What's behind the surge in violence among our youth? Same answers before. As long as you have poverty, there's going to be inequality on all levels. The media. Is the media doing what it was created to do? Yes and no. It was created to provide you with information and entertainment, and that was its primary objective, and that objective is met. However, to what degree is the real question? Through manipulation, coercion, and a few hidden agendas? Hey, let's slap a smiley face on it, and they'll eat it up. What do you have to say? Do I have any callers out there who want to share their opinion? Let me know. I can just imagine, you know, just imagine what it's like. I opened up the paper today and I was reading the New York Times, and in it, there was a family death in Staten Island. A young man, okay, a 14-year-old boy, killed his whole family. He slit his brothers and sisters' necks and slit his own and set the house on fire so nobody could get out. I can't even conceive this. And how did our kids get to be at this level at this point where they just are so violent? Why are our kids so angry? What's going on? I have a call on the line. Hey, thanks for checking out the Coco Express. How can I help you?
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I think when we think about education, we're thinking about cramming information into kids. We're thinking about, you know, the system has turned into, to a large degree, getting the numbers. What are the numbers? Kids know how to take standardized tests, which have no value in terms of what it is a child is learning, what a child is creating, what a child is absorbing as a human being. And I think that the person, I really can't comment on that last, you know, situation with the kid who killed his family and burned down the house. But what concerns me is what kind of human beings are we putting, you know, into the world? And I think as families, we have a responsibility to our kids to let them know what we value and what we think is right and wrong. And also, I think that should be something that is also taught in school. Reinforce, maybe not taught. For some kids, it'll be taught. For others, it'll be reinforcement. But, you know, education opens your mind up. It allows you to be empathetic. It allows you to see another's point of view. It gives you an opportunity to explore outside of your surroundings so that you don't feel that isolation or that your way is the only way, that other people have ways of thinking and ways of living that might have some benefit to you. And I think kids are warehoused. I mean, they need an outlet. When we grew up, there was gym, there was recess, there was after-school programs, and all these things, because of the numbers, the financial numbers, get cut. But they don't look at the ramifications. The ramifications are that you have a lot of kids with a lot of pent-up energy, a lot of aggression, and it is scientifically proven that when kids, adults, people have exercise, it really allows them to relieve stress. It allows them to kind of reset the mind it allows, you know, for you to get out some aggression so that you can go back a little more clear-headed, a little calmer, a little less aggressive, and focus. But, you know,
okay.
Our society has come down to, what are the numbers? Are my numbers looking good?
It's funny you would mention that, because in the New York Times, they have an article on the Washington, D.C., one of the districts in Washington, school districts in Washington, D.C., and they hired this particular woman who all she's been doing is going in and she laid off 277 teachers, and wherever she was previously, there were high layoffs, and it was due to budget constraints. And, you know, it's really interesting that you would mention that, because I do agree with you. I do agree with you. We've lost the focus on, the focus should have been on educating our kids, preparing them to be good citizens, to be able to walk out in the world and not stand out there naked, not knowing, but to be prepared for whatever it is that they decide to do, whether they decide to get a job or go to college and seek further education, they're prepared to do something. But right now, that's not happening. And you're right. There's no gym in a lot of schools. They don't have any kind of extracurricular recreation. Or because of budget cuts, they had to cut out those particular things. So what do you do? You know, what do we do as parents? What do we do? What do you say?
I say that it's really hard for parents to, you know, you figure you're paying taxes, you're paying you're working hard, you're doing what you have to do, the school should provide. Unfortunately, the scenario has changed. You know, the way we grew up is not the way it is. One of the things that we need to value is, and we don't anymore, is citizenship. Are you going to be a good citizen in your school? Are you going to be a good citizen in your community? And as parents, sometimes we need to come together, pull those additional funds as a group. And it really does take someone with vision as a parent to spearhead such, you know,
a monumental
program.
Effort?
It can be, because you have to really kind of reset people's thinking and saying, look, this is not how we grew up, and we have to kind of, you know, push those ideas aside to a degree. It's about funding. And once parents look at the power that they really have, and it's not about being someone giving, it's about saying, look, we have numbers, and we know that if we can pull the resource together, we have power. And that's all kind of bureaucrats look at. If you look at school districts with parents who have, who are upwardly mobile, even though they might not be in private schools, they might be in public schools, that are doctors or lawyers or, you know, in managerial positions, they will pull together. They will put in place the things that they think their kids need. And because they're willing to do it themselves, the educational boards will look at them and say, well, you know what? We can't really play with these people because they have power. And they're showing us we have power. If we pull out of this system and go elsewhere, we leave you with a deficit. We
mm-hmm.
leave you with fewer resources to work with. I have a child, and, you know, there was a school that she was in early on where they wanted to take away the gym teacher, and the parents, it was public school, did not have to put in thousands or hundreds of thousands, but they pulled a reasonable amount of resources and were able to pay that gym teacher's salary
mm-hmm.
so that he was able to stay. And because of that, the school district said, we won't pull him. And the parents, you know, for a year paid his salary, and then the school district had to pick it up because they're like, these people are serious. this school did a lot of things that were parent-based. And it's really about bringing the parents into the school, because parents sometimes have this idea that they're strangers. They can't be a participant on any level. You can. You can. That's what the PTA is for. And if you have a strong PTA, a strong parent body, you can really get some things done in your school, get some things to happen. And it also makes your children feel that their education is important, because you show up, because you're present, because they see things changing around them, and because you are being a good citizen. You are practicing citizenship. And this is not about immigration or, you know, who is legal. It's about where you are at that time and being responsible in your community and saying, I'm a citizen of this community, I'm a part of this community, and I participate. That's what citizenship is. And so many times, you know, the numbers aren't always friendly. Numbers aren't always empathetic. Numbers aren't always something that are warm and fuzzy and you can talk to and who will understand your position. People are.
Numbers have no compassion.
They're not compassionate. So when you have someone who's all about numbers, they're not really thinking about what are the ramifications of me taking, knocking out, you know, a third of the faculty. What does that do to the ratio? You know, what's the ratio of effect going to be on these kids? Are they going to get the education they need? Are they going to have the services that they need? Are they going to be able to write an essay? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you hear them saying, we want teachers, but you are letting go great teachers.
Yes, that's true. Now, on the other side of the coin, you have the young kids that are just trying to start into school, like Head Start and kindergarten. Now, I know recently there were a lot of the funding for a lot of these Head Start programs and these daycare centers was cut. Now, for me, it didn't make a lot of sense, because these young children, they need to go to school. They need to start their primary education, and they need to be able to go someplace so that they can interact with other children and learn socialization skills. And if you're going to cut this, the beginning stages, what does that lead to, and what does that do for them going forward in the future?
And also, where does that lead, you know, the parent of those children, in terms of being able to go and work.
Yeah, you're right.
And provide for those young ones and feel like they're in a place where they're safe and they can trust, you know, this person with their children, and that their children also benefit from the experience. So you leave people in a dilemma.
Yes, that is so true. Now, you know, as far as the educational system is concerned, I loved school growing up. I loved going to school. Every day I learned something. They had after-school programs. There were all different kinds of activities and all involvements and stuff. Now, we've taken, I say, 80% of that away. We've put our kids on the street now. They're on the street. And what are they doing? They're forming little mini groups and little mini packs to take care of each other until they can get home or until an adult comes home. And they wind up getting involved in all kinds of activities, which I believe is part and parcel the reason for the high rise in crime and criminal activity among our youth. And, you know, I'm trying to understand, because it really breaks my heart when I turn on the TV and watch the news and see on one weekend 7 kids have been shot and killed. That makes no sense. We're losing our kids left and right.
It's
on
not
a,
just losing our kids. We're losing maybe the kid who will be the adult who finds a cure for cancer. We're losing the kid who may be the Nobel Peace Prize winner. We're losing the kid that, you know, can solve some of the issues that might exist. We're losing potential.
Yeah, hold on. We have another call on the line who has a comment. Hi, thank you for checking out the Cocoa Express.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Now, what do you have to say about our conversation right now?
Well, from the understanding from being around this particular area where I'm at in Washington Heights, I see a lot of things going on, exactly what you're talking about as far as with the kids and dealing with situations where they have to come together because of the fact they don't have an adult in the house. Majority of the time, kids are raising kids, and that's all it is around here.
Okay.
Kids are raising kids. They are not old enough or able to take care of themselves, but then they turn around and want to take care of others, and I'm kind of mind-boggled on that myself.
Okay. Now, if you had a possible solution for that particular issue, what would you do? What would you try to implement?
Well, I think the solution probably will come from the older generation, as far as being from 24 to 30, to get together, sit down and talk to young kids, or have a little program where they can go and say, okay, this is where you come, where you can have a peaceful moment, where you can actually get whatever on your mind off it, get it off, and you be able to talk and have some type of representation.
Implemented. Yeah, that sounds excellent, but you also got to take into consideration, you know, we have a world of people with the wrong mindset, and although it may be the right idea, we got to make sure we get the right people in place to make sure this idea is implemented in a safe and healthy manner. And that's a great idea. I mean, it doesn't take but one person to step out and do something. And I agree with you. Yes, the kids are raising themselves. And, you know, what do you think? It's because we're so busy trying to keep a job and worrying about paying bills and keeping a roof over our kids' heads that we're kind of like not really paying attention the best way we can?
The problem is what you just mentioned, trying to keep a job and a roof over your head. Some parents that I have run into and know, they're working 2 to 3 jobs. So they don't really have the time to tend or see about the kids. It's come in, get some food, let me get some, like 15 minutes of sleep so I can get up and go back to my next job.
Okay.
So you're leaving the kids out there like, okay, I got to fend for myself. I have to.
Okay, it's stressful to say, you know, being a parent is in itself not the easiest job. But now with all the other, I guess you could say, issues that you throw in the pot, it makes the job even more difficult. And now with the economy being the way it is, and there are a lot less opportunities out there for both parent and child, it makes it even more of a boiling pot. We're at the point where we're boiling over, so to speak.
Yes.
Okay.
You're not able to... Everybody who have, like all parents want their children to do better than them. They don't want them to go through the situations they've been through.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to explain to a child when you're hardly home because of the fact you got to pay the rent, which is like $2,000. And if you get a paycheck that's on $200, you know you have to work more than one job.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be able to afford to live, then feed them, clothe them, it takes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But your mind is so focused on trying to make sure that you have your kids, you tend to miss out on the point that they need you to be there. They need that mother figure, that father figure, to be in the household, taking charge of what needed for the child at that time.
Okay.
But it's kind of hard because of that.
Now, my other question, and I'm posing this to both of you, do you think the media takes advantage of these scenarios and situations?
That's the only time you see it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
Go ahead. The only time you actually see, they'll show the negative of a neighborhood, they show the negative of of a situation that goes on in, like, say, for Brooklyn or the Bronx or even Washington Heights, but they never show the positive sides of when things do go, like, okay, a gentleman comes in, donates $2,000 for computers for a school. You don't hear nothing about that. But you hear about the kid who stabbed a 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
That just is like posted. They're just doing it just so they can sell papers. That's about all.
Okay.
Right. And they don't talk about how hard these parents are working, like you said, to really provide for kids and how much you may want to be there for your kids, but wanting to be there for them, you have to, that's a really hard choice. And I'm sure, you know, we all feel guilty that we can't do that as much as we could, but it is such a struggle. It is such a difficult time, and I don't, and government has to come in and say, look, we have to provide.
Okay, we have another call on the line. Hold on, please.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, thank you for checking out the Coco Express. What say you?
Hi, my name is William Furz.
Hey.
First, I'd just like to say I enjoy the program. And
thank you.
I just want to harp on one subject matter, Ms. Lyles, regarding conduct and behavior at home among the parents. I just want to say that conduct and behavior is a key factor in allowing the home not to become dysfunctional. Many violent children are the offspring of violent parents, and parents that are verbally abusive at home usually trigger off their children. Now, two adults just argue in front of their children, to me, is not appropriate behavior. The child will later emulate this behavior, whether at home or on the playground. And many children are left scarred and afraid to express themselves openly before others.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point. Does anyone else have a comment about what Mr. First said?
You are an example for your children, and I can see absolutely where, you know, that can really influence how a child behaves out in the world when they see, behavior at home, and they use that as their example for how you interact with other people, and it does scar other children, and it leads to bullying amongst other children, and we see today where bullying is a horrible, horrible thing happening that seems to be escalating and seems to be, you know, becoming a normal part of, you know, childhood, which it should not be. And schools are afraid to take up the mantle because this is where it happens a lot.
That's right.
At school, and say, this is not acceptable behavior. What's going on with you? It's the child who is afraid who really gets the attention, the negative attention, because they're afraid to say somebody is bullying them. They're afraid to say, you know, someone's hurting me, because of they're afraid of the repercussions. Whereas the bully is the one who nobody's like saying, you need to step into my office, your parents need to be in my office, and we need to find out what's going on.
Exactly.
So this hands-off approach from schools where we keep our children for hours and hours at a time really has to have some kind of an approach, you know, some kind of ways to say this is not how we behave, and really work on this idea of citizenship that I think I keep harping on, how to be a citizen, a person of merit, of worth, and behavior that's of merit and worth.
Yes.
Okay. Now, my thing is, do you think that, okay, I'm going back to the media because there's a reason why I keep doing this. Do you think that the media takes advantage of these situations and glorifies them?
Of course. Without taking advantage of these situations, the media can therefore no longer be lucrative. They like to harp on things where most of the time there's an ordeal or a tragedy, and they dwell on these occasions just to, you know, it sells. And it's a shame that the society today dwells on other people's hardships. And as we all know, stress is the number one killer. And most of the times we like to worry about other people's other people's situations, and we still have our own problems to deal with. So that's what sells, and that's the way it is.
Now, do you think if collectively if parents, because I know there is a parent organization out there that really monitors and checks the media, but as parents, do you think if we approach these different broadcast companies or whoever and told them we would prefer this, this, and that, do you think they would listen?
Yes,
no.
Sure. I believe so. But we too, as parents, we have to monitor everything. We have to monitor what type of magazines we leave out in the household. We have to monitor our children on a computer, monitor even sometimes when you're just sitting there and they're on the phone, just monitor their conversation. I mean, you don't have to pry so much, but you should be aware of your child's surroundings and who they're with and where they're at, and you should just be, you know, much more concerned.
Oh, I'm on board with that, absolutely. But in terms of the media, you know, as parents, that's a tricky one, and I say no because there are some people who are so into this. I'm sorry, I'm going to go off topic for a second.
All right.
Mel Gibson, have we heard enough of this insanity?
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's just pure insanity. And then there are some shows that want to know your opinion. They want you to take a poll. Is Mel crazy? Is this one crazy? It's like, will you stop? Obviously, these people have some serious issues that none of us can solve. Not one single one of us can solve. And so I just want that to go away. I don't want to hear another man. I don't want to hear this man ranting and raving like a lunatic, you know,
right,
on every news outlet that there is. There's nothing we can do for these people.
Right.
This is a personal matter.
So do you believe that as opposed to providing some information that's useful, they are more into sensationalizing everything as opposed to providing us with how we can help the people in the Gulf, how we can, you
some
know.
Some real issues. Some real issues.
Right, those are
who
real
issues. Who cares if Lindsay Lohan is going to jail? Thank
right.
Lord.
Right. It's about
thank
time.
You. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I say this because I believe, being that there are, as one of the gentlemen said, there are a lot of parents working more than one job. They are not home. So in some instances, the TV stars become the babysitter. And with that, they're picking up all kinds of, because now it's not like, you know, you have a certain hour when you can have certain shows come on TV. You got cable. You turn it. It's on at any time of the day. And, you know, like, I have issue, and I don't care if anybody likes it. And I have issue with the young men wearing the pants below their behind. I'm just not with that.
Right, right.
You know, but they glorify it. If in the video, the most famous artist is wearing his pants like that, then it's cool. I got to look like him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, when do we take collective responsibility and tell our artists, can you pull your pants up, please? I want to come to your concerts. I want to support you, but can you wear decent clothes? Do we have that right as parents?
Yeah, we do have that right as parents. We also have the right to be aware of it and inform the children that it's not necessary for you to wear your pants like that. I know that I have a couple of godsons. I got to get on about that from time to time. Pull your pants up. You're in the house. You're around a lot of women. No need
mm-hmm.
for it.
Thank you, sir.
No need whatsoever.
Thank you very much.
That's right.
And they're both 26 and 27. I tell them every time, pull them up.
Pull them up. That's right.
Okay, and as far as the young girls are concerned, I do not think that your boobs should be hanging out all the time. There's
right.
no reason for them to wear some of the outfits that they wear. And they could be saying, you know, I'm hating. I'm not hating. You know, what I'm saying is, what happened to wearing a really nice outfit? Free of exposing yourself and everything and thinking, you know, I look good and, you know, and always sticking your butt up. What is all of that about? They do it in the videos, so it's cool.
It's not just in videos. It's Victoria's Secret, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, you know, it's the marketing of a bra.
Right.
You know?
That's right. And it's
the extreme marketing of a bra.
Right. And it's not just Victoria's Secret. It's Cookies. It's Young
uh-huh.
World. It's
mm-hmm.
Baby Gap. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, it's the style and it's the fad. But we as parents got to understand that if we're buying the clothes for the child, then we should have set a standard that, you know, for the children to to wear. For the clothes
yeah.
that they're going to wear.
Yes, you're right. So we have to take a stand. We somehow, some way, we have to take a stand or make a point to let people know, to let the people who are in decision-making positions know you got to do better. You're not really meeting my needs, and you're not meeting the needs of my family, and you're not meeting the needs of millions of families. Change it. Now,
but you know what? I'm
yeah,
sorry.
That's okay.
In terms of media, we didn't have access to so much information. We didn't have access to all that's good and bad from every perspective. You have shows that, you know, Tots and Tiaras. I mean, it's extreme glamorization that has existed, you know, over time, sure, but we didn't have to see it. Our kids didn't have to see it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it pulls people in like, ooh, I love that too. I will put my toddler in a tiara. I want her to do, you know, it's just giving you so much information. And I knew growing up, the TV may have babysat us, but you had I Love Lucy, Dark Shadows. You didn't have a lot of shows.
Right, you had clean programming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, and at one point there was a time where programming got a little more risque, say at 9 o'clock, where
mm-hmm.
you can say at 9 o'clock kids aren't going to be watching, they're going to be ready for bed. It's 8 o'clock, it's 7, it's 10 o'clock, it's all o'clock now. So there's no, like, limitations. And I know we're going back to the old days where we had the FCC and the standards and stuff, but at some point, it's like, when do you kind of say, all right, let's set some standards. We do have families. We do have, you know, places
mm-hmm.
where we want to find certain programming acceptable at a certain time. I think, the genie's out of the bottle. How do you put it back?
So they've opened Pandora's box, and they don't know how to close it at this point in time.
No.
Well, I think society right now doesn't really want to close the box. They just want to widen it and make it more broader. As you see, most of the shows that are risque, mainly that are after hours, mainly most of them are cartoons. They're
mm-hmm.
animated. You have from Family Guy to the Cleveland
yeah.
Show to
mm-hmm.
Simpsons. They have controlled the media by making it fun and enjoyable, but really, it was never written for children. It was written for adults. So the adult humor has now become the norm for most of the children in the society today.
You got a great point. So you're saying, what you're saying basically is they took something that kids are familiar with, a cartoon character.
Exactly.
And they stuffed in all this adult content.
Exactly.
And they put it on at a time where kids could possibly be up. And say, here, now you know what's going on.
Right. And a lot of times,
mm-hmm.
most of the time, the kids are sitting right there along with the parents.
With the
not
parents.
Grasping everything that's coming across, but the messages are no longer subliminal. The messages now are just overt racism, sexism,
mm-hmm.
and whatever isms that are left
mm-hmm.
to grab.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, you are absolutely right. You're right. And, you know, I've watched The Family Guy. I can't stand it. And I couldn't believe some of the stuff that I saw and was hearing. I was just shocked. And, I mean, I'm an adult. I'm shocked at what I'm hearing.
Right.
And kids are listening to this. I even heard, I was around some kids on a train once. And they was like, did you see Family Guy last night? And I was like, I saw it last night. I'm like, my goodness.
Right.
This is funny to them? This is, you know, trying to make our kids too mature ahead of their time is also part of the problem as well, because you may know about adult situations, but you are not able to handle yourself in an adult situation.
Right.
Emotionally equipped.
Right.
Like, I believe, like, our parents had a good principle when they were growing up. A child stayed in their place. Parents didn't, you know, parents just didn't talk about, you know, like, I'll give you an example. They come home from church and start talking about Sister Betty right in front of the kids. And what happens when you discuss things in front of the children, especially when they're negative, that child now has a resentment for that individual. So
mm-hmm.
you allow the child to come into your world, and then if you don't watch it, the next thing you know, you'll be asking for the child to give a response. So now that you put the child on the same level that you're on. And it's very demeaning at times, because children just don't have respect for the older generation. They no longer have respect for themselves. And as far as their peers, it's very mind-boggling when you look at it, because the kids today, they just have no respect for one another.
Absolutely, which is horrifying.
Yes.
Which is absolutely horrifying to me.
And, okay, in regards to that, I was reading this book, and it's called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. He made Tipping Point and Blink. Now, in his particular book, he said that the way that a person becomes an expert at something is to do it for 10,000 hours. So you have to have 10,000 hours of doing this one thing, and you become an expert. Now, we can take and look at people like Tiger Woods. We can look at someone like, let's see, who is the Gates, Bill Gates. And you see the efforts of their work. Now, if we have our kids with nothing to do for 10,000 hours, or they're just hanging on the street for 10,000, what do they become?
Experts.
Right.
At what?
That's right. Exactly.
At doing nothing. Hanging on the street.
And then that's their life. And
right.
We don't
mm-hmm.
do that.
That's right. Why as parents, we can't come home and say, well, I'm busy, or I'm tired, or I have a headache. Because if we show them that we don't have anything to do, then they feel that it's okay for themselves not to have anything to do. But on the same token, we must make sure that our communities give back to the children, offer some type of extracurricular activities for the children.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they no longer have. They no longer can have these programs after school where they have a chess team, or they have a debate team, or somewhere where they can just, you know, hang out and cool out. And, you know, even if they're being critiqued, at least they can understand that it's part of society, that they are accepted. So a lot of kids just feel that, you know, that they're rejected, and that it's very hard out there, along with the gangs and, you know, the peer pressure. Nothing that we haven't been through, but it's just at a greater rate today.
Okay. Now
One thing that I would love to see, and, you know, we look at things as a negative, take those negatives and make them a positive.
Yes.
You know, kids, we're talking about kids fighting and gang wars. Why don't we put some boxing clubs in communities?
Yes.
You know, get them in. They work out. They work hard. You know, there are rules to fighting. There's no fighting in the street. You want to learn how to fight, you fight in a boxing club. You compete. You get in a place where there is some kind of structure around this physicalness.
Mm-hmm. And also, what does it take for someone to take a table and two chairs and put a chessboard and some pieces on there and say, hey, I'm teaching you how to play chess today. Who wants to learn?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's possible. That is possible. Because right now, around here, me and my one of my godsons, we play chess, and we got like 15 other people now coming. When they see me outside, you want to play? I'm like, all right, fine. And let me get the boys. It's
mm-hmm.
It's a work in progress. It's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight. Nothing
mm-hmm.
ever does. It's quicker to get into a mess. It's hard to get out.
That's right.
Absolutely.
So, when you make the first step, you got to understand it's going to take time. It's not going to be a quick fix. It's going to, you got to have put, first you got to have patience. And then
sure.
That's half the problem right there, too. The community, it totally lacks patience. Everybody want a quick answer and a quick response, and that's it. But if you have patience and you put the effort into it, it can be done.
Right.
Okay.
And
you just got to take time.
And I just want to add to that, no matter what sport a child is learning to play. Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, no matter what sport a child is learning to play, I think the first thing they should learn is how to lose respectfully.
Amen.
Yeah.
That's kind of hard. That's so
it's weird. It's very hard, and especially for grown-ups. But it's something it's something that must be taught, because a lot of times a child believes that they must win all the time. They have to learn how to lose, how to be sportsmanlike, and, you know, just be a good loser. That way, when you win, you could be a good winner.
You can win with respect, and you can lose with respect.
Exactly.
And grace. And grace is something that we haven't been able to teach. You know, I don't see a lot in kids. Being a graceful loser means that you congratulate the winner.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
You know? It doesn't mean you say, oh, I lost. Well, see you later. No, you respectfully go over there and be gracious and say, good game.
But you see, that's kind of hard because you have your NBA players who at times.
They can't say good game. Mm-hmm.
No, they can't say good game. They walk away, and they're on TV, national TV. So you got kids who adore them, see them acting ugly, and they think, oh, that's the way such and such is, so I want to be like him.
That's right.
Kids have a tendency to emulate what they see. We all got that well covered. We all understand that because you can sit back and watch the kids watch basketball and they want to be Michael Jordan or today LeBron James. Now, the reason why I'm bringing up LeBron James is because there's one time, I think like 2 years back, I watched one of my little children running around. I want to be like LeBron James. I want to be like LeBron James. When he lost, he walked off the basketball court. He didn't say nothing. He just ran. So now the speed is up. So when the kid played a little checker game, he lost. He threw the pieces on the floor and walked out, just like who he just saw. Just like who he just saw do it.
Right.
Okay.
It's like the mentality of some of the players sometimes, like you said, lose graciously, fine. Go over and shake the person's hand. Good game. And you move on to the next one. There's nothing wrong with it. But the way they see it is, I lost, I don't want to bother no more, that's it.
And then that
right.
sets the stage for other things, you know, because in school, are we being taught, you know, I'm not an educator. I can't say what goes on inside a classroom. I wish that there were some educators that would call in and tell us, you know, in the classroom, how do you deal with this type of behavior? How do you handle a child that is willful to the point where they disrupt the class with their bad behavior? What do you do?
You know what? I think in the classroom, I think the pressure of school is so great. The pressure to perform and be an A student is so great. And there is something to be said about being an A student. It takes a lot of work. It takes, you know, a lot. But actually, if that's all there is to being a student, and if that's all the teacher holds up, then you are going to have lots of kids who can't value themselves and their own efforts. You know, or want you know, you may want to strive. If you're at a C and you're striving for a B, the teacher should say, this is how we're going to get there. You know, let's not think about the A. Let's think about this B is your A. Or this C is your A if you're a D or an F student.
So,
but I think the pressure and the need, the drive, like I said before, it's about the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how can we show that we are the best at what we do. But that's all relative. Are you the best at what you do because you only value the A? Or are you the best at what you do because you are bringing children from a place where they weren't succeeding to where they are having their own personal success.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we're losing. What's our own personal success, our own personal best?
I believe I have another caller on the line with a comment.
Hello?
Thank you for checking out the Coco Express. What say
Hi.
You? Hi.
Hi, this is Kathia.
Yes.
And I've been an educator for a while now, and I wanted to make a comment to piggyback off of what you're saying. I do believe as an educator that we need to teach the children to assess themselves and be proud of themselves. Problem is, teachers aren't being taught that. This is about common sense. What would you like for your own child if you had a child? And how is it that you're going to make a world a better place with these children, with these students that you have? And you're right. Children have to learn to set their own goals, but they're not being taught how to set their own goals. The behavior problems that we find in the classroom, a lot has to do with it. One of the big problems was that I found was they weren't being heard as individuals, number one. Two, they didn't have that confidence in themselves and in their ability. And as teachers, as parents, as a community, mm-hmm. we need to tell the children, you're doing a good job. You're on the right track. Not so much critique it, but have them critique it. How did you come about this information? How do you feel about the work that you have done? How do you feel about the hours that you put in or the time you put in to study and take this exam? What did you do to prepare? Could you have done it any better? Then they will say, well, I did this, I did that, I need help in certain things, and that's where you help them build.
Okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm. And that is great. And, you know, those particular characteristics, I'll call them, are they should also be reinforced at home because, as you know, the parents always glorify the child when they bring home an A. And, you know, or they'll make a comparison. How come you don't get A's like Sally?
Right.
And that demeans the child as well. However, if we just learn to accept our children for where they are and who they are and the effort that they're making, as it was said earlier, then perhaps we would have a lot less frustration in the classrooms. And the teachers would be able to teach in a manner that they feel comfortable, and the children would be able to learn a lot more.
And
any comments?
They'll both enjoy the process. You know, it's a process. And teachers, I hope that most teachers became teachers because it's something that they love. And I think that being a teacher is such an important job. You spend more time with our children than we get to spend time with them. So in that 8 hours, 6 hours that you have with them, you know, it's not going to be all rosy because as parents we know our children aren't all rosy all the time. But in those 6 hours, I often feel that teachers get the better part of our kids, you know, because when all the frustration and stuff comes back home to us and we have to kind of say, okay, let's weed out what's going on with you. But in those hours that teachers have our kids, I would hope that teachers are enjoying what they're doing and kids are enjoying the process of being in this environment. And I have a 14-year-old, and there have been times when she's absolutely loved school, loved the teacher, loved what was happening. She's in a situation now where she's very engaged and very interested in what she's learning and what's happening. But there have been times when it's been a horrible, horrible train wreck. And when you see that, you go, God, this can be the most destructive point in a child's life as a car crash. Because so you're in the influences of a teacher are amazing. And when they're under such pressure as teachers are under now, it's just a miracle when you have people who can really break through and get some of that specialness done.
So,
and you impress upon a child that learning is important and wonderful and a gift.
So to the educator, we commend you and we thank you for your efforts. And I have to say that, you know, I find it difficult being, you know, a parent to one. And I can't imagine having, how many kids are in a classroom now? What's the average?
It depends. It can be up to 27 children in the classroom with one teacher.
Now, to engage them and capture their attention for whatever amount of time before they have a mini break, I know it's been a while, but do teachers still give them mini snack breaks and stuff like that, or that's no longer done?
It depends on the teacher. You know, some teachers feel pressured and to do everything that is required of them to teach within a certain time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about how you actually approach it as a teacher. You know,
okay.
You have to use your common sense. You also have to take into consideration the children that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was very flexible with my students. I recall I went out and bought Play-Doh for those children who I knew were antsy, you know, who
mm-hmm.
couldn't stay in their seats or kept tapping at the table. I had Play-Doh in everybody's desk, to the point where those who still needed it used it and those who didn't need it discarded it.
Okay.
You know, and I was being told that's not a good idea because it's going to distract the children. You have to give them more credit than that. You know, and it worked fine in my classroom. So it depends on the individual teachers. And they have to speak. The teachers have to talk to each other and let them know what's working, what's not working, and seek the support from each other.
Now, the other question I want to ask you is, if the teacher, are the teachers under pressure because they have a rating system? And if they don't meet those, whatever standards it is, they run the risk of being fired or put on some kind of probation or something?
Not necessarily. It doesn't necessarily work like that way. The Department of Education would like it to happen that way,
mm-hmm.
but because a lot of people have spoken out against it, especially through the union, the UFT union, they haven't actually gone that route. But that's what they're trying to do.
If you don't meet certain standards, they are gonna slate you for termination.
It's not so easy.
Okay. I'm just trying to understand, because my reason for asking this is I want to know, you know, what would cause, you know, the classroom to be such a difficult place based on the simple fact that you have all these different scenarios. I mean, do you have the stress of the children, but are the teachers, are they under stress and pressure, you know, from the establishment as well?
Definitely. Because we want the children to succeed, and
mm-hmm.
of course the administration for that building, I should say, want the children to succeed. But at the same time, they don't give you... Hold on a second, sweetheart. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It's all about children.
Yes. What happened? You want to go where?
And that's another thing. We have to acknowledge our children and give them the attention they need when they need it at times.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we are so busy and so involved in what we're doing, we kind of like, no, not yet, honey. Wait till I finish this. And what happens? They feel neglected and unwanted.
Yeah.
Not all the time. I mean, I think, you know, this is such a world where everything is so immediate. And I think
mm-hmm.
nowadays it's more to, you do have to, they do have to learn patience, you know,
mm-hmm.
and learn that sometimes you have to wait a little bit before you get what you want. Now it's like, give me. So it's not always a bad thing for a child to say, let me wait until it's my turn.
Exactly.
But then it goes to the extreme because you have some parents that never happens. You know, it's always...
There are. But, you know, I'm just saying there are a lot. There is that scenario where, you know, immediate gratification is what we... And I'm guilty of it myself. It's like I'm standing on mine. I'm like, oh, Jesus, come on. I got to go. And so... even I need, you know, a couple of patient pills to just say, okay, my turn is coming, and I have to wait, and I'm an adult.
Okay. Now, we're at a point now, what would you, each of you, what if you had the opportunity to implement something, what one thing would you implement, and how would you do it? Ding, 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 ding.
That's the easiest question in the universe.
I mean, for instance, for the gentleman, he said that he has a chess, he has him and some friends, they're outside, and they sit outside and they play chess. One thing, it doesn't mean it's something that's monumentous. It doesn't have to be something huge that's going to change the frame of this whole universe. Just one small little thing that can take off. And it's like, I love Malcolm Gladwell, and I'm so glad that I've read his books. And it's the book, The Tipping Point, and it's a book that I think all parents should get. They should read Outliers and The Tipping Point. Those are two really important books when you are raising kids, because it just really hones in to some of the little innuendos or idiosyncrasies as to what you're not paying attention to that you should be paying attention to. And in The Tipping Point, he talks about how one thing reaches a level where it becomes the big thing. For instance, he talked about the New York City subway system and how for a long time they had the graffiti all over them, and it was just left that way until they started to paint it and clean up the trains, and then you had less graffiti because there was respect being shown towards the trains. He also mentioned a house, this one particular house. It was an empty house on the block, and the kids would come and throw rocks and break the windows. And they would just leave the windows broken, and the kids would throw rocks and break all the windows out until someone said, let me just replace the windows. So each time a window was broken, it was immediately replaced. Because someone showed interest and care in that house, no more windows were broken in that house. So the point that I'm trying to make is, if we show interest in a thing, a child, I'm not calling a child a thing, but I'm just saying, if we show interest in a child by providing them with a thing that they can do or something that they really like, do you think that that would make a difference in that one child? And that one child can also make a difference in someone else's life as well. What say you?
Well, there is this website called TED, and it's all about innovative forward thinking, out-of-the-box thinking. And there was a gentleman on there who, they found this storefront. And this storefront, they turned into, you know, there were conditions as to what could be done in it. And he wanted to provide an after-school center, somewhere kids can go and work on, get tutoring. So he found that he couldn't really do this tutoring program because it was a storefront, so they had to sell something. So he came up with this idea about pirate paraphernalia. Now, who really needs pirate paraphernalia? But that was the front for the tutoring facility in the back. So they got things to sell, like eye patches and stuffed parrots that you can put on your shoulder, and just ridiculous things that had to do with being a pirate. But behind the scenes was a thriving, great tutoring program. And one of the components of the tutoring program was that the kids would learn to write by writing their own books. And they would sell the books at this pirate store. So the idea caught on. It's in Brooklyn, actually. The idea caught on, and kids would come by and see a pirate shop, and they would come and want to buy the stuff. And then they would go, and the parents would come in and find out that there was a tutoring program there as well. And the kids who were writing and selling their books at the store were so proud of themselves. It really gave them this love of writing and publishing and knowing how important that this place was. Then another city opened up one, and it's about spy, you know, how to be a spy.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of ridiculous things, like fedoras and, you know, these ridiculous trench coats with lots of pockets. But behind the scenes is a tutoring program. And I think that would be a great scenario, a place where a kid can go, which, you know, you always have to trick a kid that it's one thing, but behind the scenes, it's something else equally as magical going on.
Okay, that sounds excellent. That sounds excellent. Okay, did anyone come up with that one thing they would do? We got you down, sir, with the chess stuff, right?
Yeah, you got me down with the chess stuff.
Yeah, so you can get another table and two chairs, and you can sit them outside. And
oh, I got three boards already.
You got three boards?
I got three boards. There's a park where it has three tables. I put them all across the boards and let them play.
That's really cool.
Yeah, but that is cool. Okay, and this is being done in Washington Heights. Now you got to do is just get a sign that says what time you're going to be there so the kids will know when they can come and catch you.
Yeah.
That works. That works. Okay, does anyone else have that one thing?
Silence is golden.
Okay, well, I guess, you know, the one thing that I think that I would be able to do that would probably be a good thing is if anybody is out there with a kid who wants to learn how to do what I'm doing right now, they're more than welcome. I am open to share with them my knowledge. It may be limited. However, whatever it is I do know, I'm more than willing to share with them.
Okay.
That's my one thing. I mean, this internet radio, it's like half gun will travel. Well, half microphone will travel. And I can go anywhere with this as long as I have a computer and I have a laptop, I have a microphone. I can come and I can teach anyone how to do this. And they can create their own programming. And they can create a show that addresses things that they like to do or things that they're interested in. That's my one thing.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else have anything?
Well, my one thing that I'm thinking of doing is starting maybe an after-school program that's geared towards technology. I've received complaints from people about students graduating from high school and not knowing how to use basic computer skills, you know, Microsoft Word, word processing. They know how to upload music and download music and what to do with pictures, but they're not knowing the basics that they need to go to get along. And which includes, you know, doing their paperwork and doing research. They don't know how to do research on the things that they're learning or the things that they're really interested in or have questions about. So what I thought would be important is to have an after-school program that not only helped them learn about how to research and how to use the programs that we adults use for work and for communication, but also what type of jobs are out there that coincide with technology. I mean, and it's a wide array. You know, you have music, yes, but you have literature, you have
engineering.
Engineering. it's so wide, and
mm-hmm.
the children have no idea. So I thought it would be great to have even professionals come in from even the medical field,
mm-hmm.
you know, and come and share what they do and how computers work, technology works in their field. So they know that they have options. They know that they have
mm-hmm.
a way to incorporate technology with something that they like to do.
Okay, my question to you is, what if you started on a smaller scale? What if you just have one computer in a room and had maybe one or two students? Would that be a place for you to start? Would you consider that?
Yes, definitely.
So now, anybody out there listening, if you have a spot and you don't mind having a trained, certified educator take her computer and sit there and teach a kid or two about the computer, she's open for it. That's an excellent way to start. And even if you just have one or two students, you can still have a professional come in and explain and talk and teach. All it is just, you know, it's word of mouth, because what's going to happen is, what are you doing, man? No, I got to go. I'm going to this after-school program. This lady, she's teaching me how to do word processing. Oh, can I come with you? That's all it takes.
Right.
So we got to make sure we find some place for this woman to get her computer and sit down and teach one teenager how to operate the word processing system, so that they can be able to not only create a resume, but they can do a research paper or write a letter, a business letter, and all those different things that go along with using a computer, doing spreadsheets, doing all those different programs and performing all those different tasks. And that is excellent and wonderful. So we found three things, you know, four things, really. Oh, no, three. Okay, miss. What's the one thing that you would think about doing? Hmm? Yeah?
Oh, I told you.
Oh, you would do the storefront with this other activity going on in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's cool. That makes a great deal of sense, you know, because, you know, at this time we need to just brainstorm to save ourselves, because it's not about, you know, we're talking about the future. We got to put our heads together and we got to find simple solutions that will last, not just a quick fix for now, but solutions that will last and that will affect and possibly change the dynamics of the way things are right now. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we are all necessary, and we are all wonderful, and none should be left out or forgotten.
Right.
No.
And as parents, grandparents, educators, caregivers, we have to make sure this gets done. It's just so important. I mean, it's important to me, and I'm sure it's important to a millions of other parents out there. But sometimes you're stuck in a dilemma. You don't know where to turn or what to do. And sometimes you're overwhelmed by your situation. And we have to stop being overwhelmed with our situations, because, yeah, okay, the bill's going to have to be paid, yes. And you're going to have to keep a roof over your head, yes. Those are all necessary. Those are all mandatory. But take a half an hour, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, teach a kid to read a book. Just sit down and listen to them, because there are a lot of kids out there who have something to say and they have no one to listen to them.
Right.
I mean, it just takes two ears. That's it. And maybe, you know, or if you see a child who every day you see that same child walking down the street bouncing the basketball, but they never really go to a basketball court. You know, maybe they don't know where the court is, or maybe they're afraid to go to the basketball court by themselves.
Right.
We can't
mm-hmm.
keep letting our kids roam around, you know, figuring, oh, well, I'll just hang around here. And that's the hanging around part is the problem part. That's where the problems begin, hanging around. You need to be engaged in some kind of activity. You got to be actively involved in something. You got to be out there doing something. And as parents, we have to be engaged in our kids. And it goes on to being more than just our kids, because, you know, the old saying, it takes a village to raise a child. And this is so true, because we've taken our hands and our eyes and turned our backs on the village, and look at where it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to now start turning around, and we can't blame anybody. We can't blame the government. We can't blame the system. We can't blame the man. We can't do that anymore. It's a waste of time. It's a fruitless effort. We now have to look at ourselves and see, what can I do as Sally to change this? What can I do as Harold to change that? For me, from where I am right now, what can I do right now where I am? I mean, where I am professionally, where I am emotionally, where I am, period. Who am I right now, and how can I make a change that can affect a child's life in a positive manner? Now, if I'm going on too much, y'all just tell me, stop, stop, stop.
No, you're absolutely right. But I love that storefront idea.
Yeah, that is real cool. I agree with you. That is really cool. You know, and yeah, there are going to be obstacles, and there are going to be, you know, a point in time where somebody may come and say, you need, like, for instance, with the gentleman with the chest, he may have, by the end of the summer, 10 tables out there, and they may tell him, you need a permit to have all these tables out here. So what you do is you take your tables, you break them up, and put them on another block.
Up and down the street, two here, two here, two here.
You know, it still gets done, you know, and they can't say anything until you can find a way to house all those tables in one place so that they can come in. You know, you have to work with your guys.
There are all these great chess tournaments, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you'll be the Washington Heights chess team.
Yeah. You know, you got, I mean, I learned how to play chess when I was younger, and it takes a lot of mental toughness to play chess. You have to really concentrate and pay attention. And that's one of the things our kids don't have, the ability. I'm not saying they all don't. They don't have the ability to focus on one thing and concentrate and pay attention for an extended period of time, because we're into, as you said earlier, the instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't win in 5 minutes, I don't want to play no more.
Uh-huh.
So, do I have to think?
Yeah.
I have
right.
to think ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I have to strategize. What's that? You know, these are all skills, lifelong skills.
Yeah. But you know what? Kids do them. They do them. They scheme against each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do all, you know, in the negative context, they can do it. But let's turn that around and make it a positive. You know, let's make that work for them in ways that it's productive at school, you know, trying to get a job in a sport that you love. But they do it.
Yeah, they use the skills, but they use them in the wrong context.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something, and that's where we as adults, parents come in play. We have to guide them and teach them and show them. And as you said earlier, the gentleman said earlier, you know, you got a lot of kids raising kids. That's another issue as well. You have a lot of young kids out there who had kids at a younger age, and they too were learning and growing as they were trying to raise a child. So some things get lost in the translation.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what else? All those negative behaviors, instead of a lot of people pointing fingers and saying, this is wrong, this is bad, you know, give it a name. This is what you're doing. People mm-hmm. do this in the real world, but there's a better way to do it. This is what
right.
it's called, and you're really good at it. Now let me show you how to use it.
How to apply it. Mm-hmm. Where to apply it, as opposed to...
Exactly.
Yes.
Like what you're doing right now is called scheming here. But in the real world, in the business world, it's called strategy. And that's how you get money. Scheming gets you no money.
Strategizing
gets you money.
Exactly.
That's the difference. And maybe even a certain amount of respect. Scheming, not so much.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, the funny thing about it is you take some of these known hustlers, and you know, someone like Jay-Z. What an amazing story.
Mhm.
Okay? What an amazing story. He turned...
The rap story, so many of them are.
Yes, yes, in the rap game, yes, a lot of them. pretty much most of them are. You know, they realize that this is not the way to do it. This is the correct way to do it. Let me apply. Even in the Malcolm X autobiography, he talked about how all of those individuals that he came across in his lifetime, had it been different circumstances, they could have been mathematicians, geniuses, engineers, and the like. And unfortunately, they used those particular skills for the wrong thing.
Right. And you know what else is amazing? I see kids on the street doing acrobatics and dancing and all this stuff. And I said, those are Olympians.
Yes.
Those are gymnastic Olympians. What happened? Why?
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, it is about flipping the script and changing that story and just modifying the path. And it's going to take, you know, the adults in the community to say, you know, how do we focus this energy in a positive way?
Mm-hmm.
We all have to be there. We all have to be there. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to jump off the call now, but this was great. And it was great to hear that, you know, so many people out there, you know, it's the little things. It's real cool that you can get out there and sit and play chess and focus some people for an hour or so. Keep doing
Excellent.
It. And
yes.
keep teaching, you know, and keep giving out Play-Doh. I think that's another great thing.
Yeah.
And I think that works. You have the fidgety kid who just needs something to hold on to remind him that he is in school, that he's not outside playing at the moment, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's the little things, and they're amazing things, and thank you for the show.
You're welcome, and thank you for sharing with us. We really appreciate all of your input. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Now, well, you know, we are coming to the close of our show, and I need to know, does anyone want to make any further comments or anything before we close out?
Well, I agree with what you said as far as it takes a community and to raise a child. I remember growing up that you couldn't do half the stuff kids get away with now because everybody knew about it. And before you get in trouble, before you get into the house, those days are so missed. And if you could get the community back into play a big role in it, it would be a nice to see, because I'm guaranteed half the stuff that the kids get away with now would not happen.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for that comment, because that is so true. But it's really difficult now because, you know, the kids have become, to some degree, very disrespectful, and it's really difficult to try to even say something to them, because they might pull a gun on you. You never know. You know, and that's where we are. But we can turn this all around. You know, it may sound discouraging, disheartening, and some of these things may sound extremely negative. And as I said earlier, we have exceptional people out there doing exceptional things every day. We don't hear about it. We don't know about it. But they're out there. And we need to become exceptional people doing exceptional things every day just like they are, and not pay attention to what the media portrays the world to be like, and not listen to all the negative things going on in the community. Granted, they're going to happen. Granted, they're out there. However, we do not have to play a part in that. We're going to play a part in doing more and being better, and that's all it's about. Where we are right now, we are capable and able to make a difference. You may not have millions of dollars, but you got some time. You got 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe an hour. You can make a difference in that little bit of time. I commend a lot of these celebrities out there who do a lot, who give back in the community. I commend a lot of the radio station personalities like Steve Harvey and what's the other one that wrote the book? He comes on in the evening, Michael Bazin. They have some wonderful programs going on out there, and they're affecting a lot of communities in a lot of different ways, and I commend them. They are necessary. And I don't even know half the different programs out there being done, but these are things that are being done on a large scale. I'm just talking about doing something on a smaller scale, something really small. And that's all it takes. It just takes one person making an effort. You know? So I'm going to thank you, each and every one of you, for your participation. We've raised some important issues that need further discussion, and perhaps we need to begin to make an action plan. I know who each of you are, and I will be in contact with you, and maybe we can kind of work something out where we can figure out how we can kind of move this forward and be able to implement some of these things that we had done in place. If you guys are up for it, we can try to figure out something.
Okay.
And I'll be in contact with each and every one of you. Now, so thank you each. Thank you for your contributions to this dialogue and this commentary and whatever you want to call it today. I'm glad I had the opportunity to do this. I'm glad I had the opportunity to speak with you and hear what you're thinking about and hear what's going on with you. And it's wonderful to know that you're out there and you're doing wonderful things. I thank you for being a teacher, because had it not been for teachers who cared, I would not be sitting here right now. I would not be able to do the things that I've done. And for that, you are highly commended. And thank you to the gentleman. I want to thank you so much for being out there with your chessboard. That is cool, and that is important, and that is relevant and necessary as well. So please join me on August 7th, 2010 at 4 p.m. I'm changing the show time for this particular individual. She is an amazing person, and she gives meaning to the word doable. Her name is Trisha Downing. She is the first Iron Woman wheelchair athlete, and she's a paraplegic, and her story is amazing. So I would like you guys to tune in and listen up. On August 14th, we're going to have Stephen Duncanson back again with Paradigm Shifters, Principles for Life and Success, and he's going to we're going to go over the issues, some of the principles that he gave us, and we're going to see how they can be applied into everyday life. And that stands to be very interesting as well. That's our show for today, Saturday, July 24th. I'm your host. Thank you all for your participation. Thank you to my listeners for being so supportive. You all have a wonderful day, and stay hydrated. It's hot out there.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.